Välkommen till Hästveterinärerna, en podcast från Boehringer Ingelheim Animal Health. I den här podden samtalar vi med specialister från olika områden inom hästmedicinen. Med det gemensamt att de delar vår och din passion för hästarna. Välkommen tillbaka till Hästveterinärerna. Podden för dig som är veterinär eller djursjukskötare och jobbar med häst. Jag heter Maria Willemsson. I avsnitt 2 med Sanna Lindåse från SLU pratar vi om PPID, vilka hästar du bör testa och hur du ska tolka resultatet. Welcome back to the podcast, Sanna.
Thank you so much.
This episode, we're going to spend talking about PPID, which is, of course, another endocrine issue in the horse, and it is somewhat related to ID, but not always, not necessarily. And you're gonna have to elaborate a little bit on that. But I'm going to start by asking you, do we know anything about the prevalence of this disease? How common is PPID among the Nordic horses or the Swedish, Danish, Norwegian horses? Is it underdiagnosed, or do you think we have a clear picture of how many they are?
Okay. So there are actually one study, epidemiological study from Denmark. It's quite old. It's like 14, 15 years old. So I don't know how much we can rely on these numbers, but in that study, they found a prevalence of about 20% in older horses, which is a very important point here. So in horses older than 15 years old, and that is in line with other epidemiological studies in other parts of the world. For example, in Australia, a study also has shown that the prevalence is somewhere about 20% in horses older than 15 years. So when it comes to prevalence of PPID, I think that the most important thing is here that when you have a young horse, you should not think PPID. That is my take-home message here. Because the prevalence in younger horses is very, very low. And I think actually there is a study, I'm not sure, I think I described this correct, I hope that. But I know that there is a study, I think it was in UK, that the prevalence of PPID if you looked all over the range of ages, I think it was like 2% in a specific population. We need to know here again that we talked about under the EMS and ID that there are just a small portion of horses that are sampled here in all of these studies. So you have to be careful when you interpret these to the whole population. But results are conclusive when it comes to the age cutoff. So younger horses, and especially horses younger than 15 years old, we have a very low prevalence. So I think that's something that is really important to think about when you sample horses. And when maybe we will come back to diagnostics, I hope so, because that is like a main key here to not sample the wrong horse. And I think you said in the beginning here that you were thinking about if we underdiagnose this disease. And I would say that these days, again, that the awareness, the knowledge is so much higher when you compare it to like over 10 years ago among horse owners, among veterinarians. So I think it is very rare actually that we underdiagnose this disease these days. And maybe actually in the opposite direction, if we sample the wrong horses and we are back here at horses that are young and do not have clinical symptoms. So that is my experience at least.
We're going to come back to the diagnostics and talk a little bit about the clinical symptoms there as well. But as you say, the awareness have increased dramatically the last 10 years or so. And also when you read older literature, 10 or 15 years old books or articles, laminitis is often described as the reason that the horse owner will go to the vet and then have a diagnosis of PPID, because the test is not made until then, and it's described as the most common symptom. But if Is that the case? Is your sense or in your perception, is that the case nowadays? Do we see a lot of PPID horses with laminitis, which is is it discovered when the laminitic episode comes? Or
yeah, I see where you're heading here. Mm-hmm. I think that the first thing is yes, definitely. We still see horses that are sampled for PPID suspicion after a laminitic case,
yeah.
Definitely. But one of the other symptoms that are very, very typical for PPID, the hypertrichosis and like the late shedding of the fur and so forth, I think we see much more seldom horses with severe hypertrichosis,
yeah.
Which if we find it, it is a very it gives us a very strong indication of PPID.
Mm.
So I think that as we know that this is a very common symptom for this disease, we do sample them, we do diagnose them much earlier in the disease progress. But when it comes to laminitis, actually, I think it is quite often that is actually the time point where you contact your veterinarian and you do sampling.
Yeah.
So we see PPID horses with laminitis, definitely. And maybe here it is time for us to like relate back to, is it okay if we relate back to the insulin dysregulation here?
Of course.
Because this is also so difficult because PPID, we know that it's a disease. It can have several different symptoms, and they do not always be there. We have some symptoms in one horse and we have some symptoms in the other horse. It can differ a lot. But when it comes to laminitis, we know now from years of research that it is also in PPID horses, it is the degree of insulin dysregulation that cause laminitis.
Yeah.
And that is so important because I think that we are aiming at managing laminitis also in the PPID horse.
Yeah.
It is so important that we also take care of the insulin dysregulation because, they are not always relate to each other. And I can say that we do not actually know if insulin dysregulation, when we see it in a PPID horse, is it because it have PPID or does the same horse also have insulin dysregulation? Do you understand what I mean here?
Yeah.
And so this is also a problem for us because we do not have epidemiological data. So we do not know so much about the relationship between these two diseases.
Yeah.
So that is actually now we are like being a bit confused and we talk about different things here. But the laminitis part of the PPID complex, as a clinician, you need to be aware of that it is not sufficient to just see if the horse have elevated ACTH levels, for example, because that will not tell you if that individual will be laminitic prone.
Mm.
And if it's okay that I just relate to treatment here, now I'm like mixing everything, but I think this is so interesting to discuss because I think it's also when we treat horses for PPID, which is a very important treatment and it decreases a lot of the other symptoms. But when it comes to the insulin dysregulation, the information on how pergolide as a treatment for PPID, how it acts on the insulin metabolism is very scarce. And actually, there is a quite recent published study in which PPID horses that were treated with pergolide compared to non-treated PPID horses were compared. And in this study, pergolide treatment did not decrease the insulin secretion postprandially during OST. So why I'm saying this is it is correct, definitely is correct to treat horses with PPID with pergolide, but you need to be informed on that it may not decrease the risk for laminitis in the horse.
Mm.
So was this clear? Do you understand what I mean here?
Yes, absolutely.
Yeah. Yeah, and maybe I maybe like took all your questions now, but
no, but I was still going to come into that part about the connection between ID and PPID because if there's one thing that I know is that we don't know that much. But my question was actually, do we know more? Is there something new, or is there something that we know now that we didn't know 5 years ago or something? What's like the latest update or the latest knowledge about this connection?
Yeah, I think it's a very tricky question again, but I think we can at least say that ID is frequently observed in horses with PPID. And it is a quite recently published study from the Australia, I think, that found somewhere above, I think it was about 70%, sorry, that above 70% of the PPID horses that were tested for ID had that additional diagnosis. So it is common, but again, I cannot say that it is a part of PPID or that we have two different distinct endocrine disorders here.
It just happened to be in the same individual.
Yeah,
or,
because, you know,
or
PPID,
have the same predisposed.
Yeah, it's so much that we don't know here, and it's very frustrating. And if we have a horse with PPID, that horse is older, and this is like a progressive disease. So it is not unlikely that this horse may have had a low degree of insulin dysregulation that has been worsened during the years, and then PPID develops, you know, and it's like it just go on. And I think what I would really like to see is like a big, this is like a wish, but I know that the reason that we don't have it is like it is so expensive and so difficult to perform these long-term epidemiological studies. But if I could have a wish, it would be so interesting to like start. I will try to describe like how I would have liked to do it. So to start to follow horses when they are young, let's say like big herd of horses, and the best would have been like multi-center studies, so that this was performed in many different countries and so forth. So that we start sampling horses before they develop disease. And then we continue to follow these horses for years and years and years and see what is happening over like from start to like 20 years old horses, you know, because that is the only thing that can give us more information about how these diseases develop and how they relate to each other.
So we
are a bit struggling in the dark here. If you compare to like human diabetes research, these types of studies are very, very commonly performed. As you can see, it's like extremely expensive to perform this study. So again, unfortunately, I can't say so much about the recent knowledge about the connection, but I think at least it is important for a clinician to know that many PPID horses have ID, independent of the correlation between those two, and that we need to handle the insulin dysregulation more as a separate problem, so we do not forget about that problem and just treat like the other PPID symptoms.
So I guess the take-home message there would be do both tests. If you have a positive PPID horse, then test for ID as well. Or
exactly. And if you have a, maybe we can come back to that, but or we can take it now, because I think it is important to have that in mind, so that if you have, for example, if you have a horse that is laminatic, so you are sampling the horse due to the fact that this horse have had laminitis. And if that horse do not have any other symptoms that correlate to PPID, I would say that it is wrong to only take a ACTH sample. If the horse is older, you should definitely do it, absolutely. But you also need to perform some kind of test for investigation of insulin dysregulation. If we just continue with the, we can take a bit more take home message when in terms of PPID when we're at it, I think, because I think it's also very, this is a very difficult thing because, as you know, ACTH concentrations, they differ during the year.
Yes.
And we have new cutoffs that are, they are divided into different months during the year. So it's quite, detailed now, these cutoffs for different parts of the year. But I think what is important here and what the latest research indicates that if you have a horse that have clinical or like very clear symptoms of PPID, and you take a sample for that are and you look at the cutoffs for that are adjusted for the time of year when you sample the horse, and you should rule in or rule out the disease, right? So when you have the horse that are typically PPID, it maybe have had laminitis, it has long curly hair coat, maybe it has weight loss and so forth. If you sample that horse, you should use the lower cutoff to include. Are you with me here? So you do not have to have so high ACTH values because you have so much clinical evidence of the disease.
Yeah.
But on the other hand, if you have a horse that you sample just for the sake of laminitis, you need to have much higher levels to rule in that disease in that specific horse. So then you have to go to the other range of the cutoffs.
Yeah.
So that is it is important how we interpret these results. So that is also a take-home message to the clinicians that use ACTH for sampling.
So speaking about the diagnostics, because I mean, ACTH is by far the most common test, I would say, in Scandinavia at least. But there are these TRH stimulation tests. Can you just shortly explain what is that, and do we perform it? Do you perform it in your clinic, and how is it done?
Yeah, that's a question that I'm not the best suited person to answer, because I have never performed a TRH stim test. And the reason is that TRH is not a registered drug in Sweden. So we are, according to our legislations, not allowed to perform TRH stim tests. So I'm not at all familiar to that test. And I don't know actually about the situation in the other Scandinavian countries. Do you know if they use TRH stim tests in Denmark, for example?
I wouldn't know, but I do know that it has been performed as a, how do you say, if you can't be sure, if the ACTH test fails for some reason or so on. I mean...
Exactly. But it's like the next step to take. We also have the dexamethasone suppression tests.
Yeah.
And I think that test is not at all used a lot. And, you know, it's not very nice to give corticosteroids to a horse that you are afraid for laminitis.
No.
so I think that is one reason why dexamethasone suppression tests are not being used so much. But as you said in the beginning here, I think that the vast majority of clinicians rely on ACTH blood sampling for diagnosis of PPID. And actually, you know, every time that we have like a tons of different tests to use, that is because we do not have one single good one.
Yeah.
The best way of diagnosing PPID is like a postmortem examination of the brain. So, and that is not very nice for the horse. So we need to have something to rely on other. And I would say that ACTH is convenient to perform. And if you know how to interpret the test results, I think actually that you come very, very far with using that test.
Yeah.
And I think actually that it is very, the ACTH blood sampling is the most used test worldwide, I would guess. And I actually think that. And there is actually a quite newly published study from Australia, I think it was. And they had like over 90-95% of the horses that were included in that study were included based on ACTH, and only like 3% or so with TRH stim tests.
Yeah.
So I think you come far with ACTH blood sampling, but you need to know how to interpret these cutoffs and to only sample the horse that you have a clear suspicion of, because we know that ACTH can be secreted due to stress, due to pain, and we have so many that can blur this up.
So always in conjunction then with the clinical signs, of course.
I would say.
Is there anything else you'd like to add around this diagnostics the issue? Because there's a lot we could say about it, but it generally comes down to quite simple rules of thumb, or, you know?
Yeah, but I think that, you can, as a clinician working with PPID patients, I think that it is important to remember that it is not, many times it is not an acute disease, if you know what I mean. So if the horse is not like extremely laminitic prone, the it is not a rush to put the horse on pergolide treatment.
Mm.
So be calm, like take one step at a time, evaluate both ACTH or whatever test you use, as well as insulin dysregulation. And if the horse is not laminitic prone and it's not show any diagnostic tests that indicate insulin dysregulation, then it is not a rush. Because I think that as we have these insecurenesses with the diagnostic methods and ACTH, absolutely, it is better, I think, to like stay put and retake a sample in a couple of months and see, where are we going here? Are we going up? Are we going down?
Yeah.
Are we like take it easy? I think that is one thing that I just can add.
Mm, yeah, mm. It's not an acute disease in that sense.
No, many times. No, actually not. So, and we talk about lifetime treatment. We talk about a quite expensive treatment. So before we go there, before I put the horse on treatment, I really want to know that this horse really are a PPID horse.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Mm.
So I think, there is a lot to say about the PPID subject as well, but as we have other topics to cover, we should probably move on, even if it's very interesting. So in the next episode, we're going to talk about more about management, and that's a very important part when it comes to these horses, of course, both especially when we talk about the insulin dysregulated individuals. So thank you so much for this session, and talk to you soon again.
Yeah, see you. Bye.
Tack för att du lyssnar på Hästveterinärerna. Om du gillar det du hör, glöm inte att trycka prenumerera i din podcast-app så att du inte missar några avsnitt. Berätta också gärna om vad du tycker genom att ge en recension. Vi tar gärna emot tips på kommande gäster och ämnen, och våra kontaktuppgifter finns i poddens beskrivning.